Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
Welcome to the Songwriter Connection Podcast, where we look at the craft of songwriting through the eyes of the songwriter. Each week, we make a connection with a music maker, listen to their songs, and hear their stories. From Nashville, Tennessee, here's your host, Dave Lenihan.
Well, thank you for joining us. I am terrible with the numbers. We believe this is episode 159. We had a little mix-up with the numbers around St. Paddy's Day because I had to move things around. I had an artist from Ireland that we wanted to put on. So, you know what? What's more important is it gets out there, right? You'll find this as 159 and a guest I've been really wanting to have on this podcast ever since I wrote with him a couple of months ago. And let me tell you a little bit about him. He is an amazing... let's start first with instrumentalist because it's multi. You play a lot of different instruments. Great guitar player. He's a producer. He has toured with people like Vince Gill, Bo Diddley, played for Willie Nelson, Toby Keith, Dizzy Gillespie. Really? Because I love jazz.
Yeah, we didn't tour together, but we did a couple of shows together.
We'll talk about that. Yeah. He also Kenny Chesney.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the band leader for Glenn Campbell. Hall of Famer for, 15 years?
Mm-hmm. That's correct, yeah.
So we got a lot to talk about with our guest Jeff Dayton today, who's had cuts from Jug Stone and George Strait. You write a lot. So we're going to talk songwriting with Jeff. How are you, Jeff?
One of my favorite subjects, Dave.
Thanks for taking the time.
Yes, indeed.
Sharing a cup of coffee
good
with
coffee.
Us.
We're going to kick it off, man.
Yeah, and this is Seattle's best. It's just the knockoff.
Like they said in Pulp Fiction, hey, man, this is good coffee.
Good coffee, man.
You don't have to compliment it. I know I have good coffee.
A tasty beverage, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Fire me up.
Wow, man, I'll tell you, we wrote a couple of months ago, and there was four of us in the room, and I just learned so much watching you work, and you had so many great stories in between, and we finished one up. You're a quick writer.
I'm not a ponder, pause, tinker with it. That drives me crazy.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So, I like to get, you know, if there's a lane, drive to the hoop, man. Who cares?
You know? I love that too, you know?
Well, I have a lot of it kind of analogies. My friend Penny calls me analogy man.
Analogy man.
Yeah.
Well, good.
Yeah.
And that's helpful for songwriting, isn't it?
I think so. I mean, if you can, what I call song speak, you know, if you can talk in song speak, you know. I was going to write a book called that, and then I changed the title, but I haven't changed it. I haven't finished the book yet, so it still could be song speak.
You do have that book coming out, don't you?
Well, not coming out, but it's in the works. You know, I'm still trying to find time to write these stories down because I tell them so often I forget what I've written. So,
half full and overflowing.
That's the title I'd like to put out. Yeah,
but you do have a new record out.
It's can you believe it or not? There's another one out. Glenn Campbell said, I have a new record out. He said, well, wait a minute. It wasn't released. It escaped. So that's the case here. This is my 17th solo album since 2010.
Yeah.
And it's definitely a labor of love. Songwriters know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And if you're songwriters all over the world, you know what I'm talking about. I mean, the next one is like the greatest one you've ever written. Hey, Mom, you know.
It's the same with your song, right?
Oh,
the last one you wrote is the greatest song.
I know. The one I just finished with my friend Mark Hauser yesterday. We're going, this is great.
Oh, and you're going to play it for us, right?
No, it's too fresh. It's too fresh.
You know what? That's a good point.
I like to let them kind of mature a little bit.
I've
made the mistake of rushing them into the public eye, and then later on I've gone, you know, should have turned that one over.
Uh-huh. You know, I've done that too. And every time, I'll say, you get the temptation to play it because you so love it.
Mm-hmm.
And you're playing it around, and you're, I think I'll throw that new one out there. And every time I do, I'm like, why did you do it? It wasn't quite, it wasn't ready yet.
Yeah. Sometimes you take the steak off the grill and you got to put it on for a couple more minutes.
You know? Sometimes you do.
A little too pink.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So tell me about your new record. It's more of a trop rock thing again, huh?
It is. It's about equal parts trop rock and songwriter. I mean, I'm a songwriter regardless, but 14 cuts, 12 of them are solo writes, and one is a co-write, and one is a tribute to my friend Kevin Odegaard, who worked with Bob Dylan.
Ooh, wow.
He was on the Blood on the Tracks album, and it was his guitar playing that opened up Tangled Up in Blue.
I love that album. That's one of my all-time
favorites. It's the biggest record Bob had in the 70s, and it kind of brought him back to fame and touring and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But Kevin and I are old friends since the 70s, and I played in his band. And two of the guys that were part of our thing, David Rifkin and his little brother Bobby, David was our producer, and Bobby was our drummer. And after the KO band wrapped up, I got a five-night-a-week country gig, and David and Bobby ended up with this kid that we had met in the studio named Prince. And Prince borrowed my guitar at one time, and Bobby ended up jamming with him as his drummer, and Bobby became Bobby Z in the Revolution from Purple Rain and all that.
Oh, wow.
And David became David Z, the producer. So,
how about that?
As a thank you to Kevin, you know, I think the song I've cut, it's called When a Heart is Broken. It's the coolest cover song I've done in a long time, and I don't typically do covers.
You don't?
Yeah.
Something, this one was special.
Yeah, it's just a thank you to Kevin for where he put me at that time in my life.
Isn't that something? And you grew up in Minneapolis, didn't you?
I did. I grew up in the Twin Cities. And,
a lot of good music up there for influence. I mean, you had Dylan was from, Duluth?
Hibbing, actually.
Okay. And Prince, of course. And,
Jimmy Jam, Terry Lewis. A lot of the guys that, they discovered Johnny Lang up there in the upper Midwest, blues guitar player.
Oh, yeah, fantastic.
Lot of people from behind the scenes, guys that were in Prince's band, including Tommy Barbarella and Michael Bland and people that came later on, and our pal Matt Fink, and just all sorts of good people. Willie Weeks spent a lot of time in the Twin Cities. Al Jarreau was in the Twin Cities, a bunch. And, there were so many guys, great musicians. And the Peterson family, I mean, they've all had gigs. I think Billy Peterson played with, Steve Miller Band.
Steve Miller Band.
Yeah, for 25 years.
So, big fan of his, too.
Yeah.
You came from a musical family, too, right?
Mom played the piano and sang, and my father was a guitar player. He had one in the closet most of the time. And my stepdad had gear in the closet, but I never heard him play a note.
No.
So, there was family, family music around. And the old style, my grandmother's family, all five kids played an instrument, and they all, four played an instrument, and the youngest girl ran around, caused trouble. But that's in the day when you wanted entertainment, you either turned on that scratchy Philco radio or you created music in your home.
That's right. And you did a lot of that, huh?
We did. And I was right away, I had an ukulele with no strings on it, and I was jamming, man. I was so good. Jamming along to the Kingston Trio and all my favorite groups. And when I was nine, the Beatles had just hit on Sullivan. And, man, I tell you what, I begged my mom for a guitar. And she bought me my first, it was like... My first guitar cost $25. Head and neck like a ski jump, strings all covered in rust. But I banged that thing each and every day, till Uncle Boo stopped by for dinner and he heard me play. He said, "That ain't worth a daggone. Sonny, better get your twang on. If you dip your picker, twang on. Dig a little deeper. Turn it up. Lay it on down. Oh, everybody got to have their sound. So find that song. Make it proud and strong. And twang on." when you have life experiences, if you're going to have a life experience, you might as well write about it.
Yeah, might as well.
I have a song that I wrote with Jeff Carson, the late, great Jeff Carson on Curb.
I love that guy.
It's called Even God Cries. And part of it came from, as a kid, even back at 8 years old, Mom called me her little oak. Tough as nails and never showed what I felt inside. So I went way out on a limb, higher than I've ever been, till a big old gust of wind took me by surprise. And all scratched and bleeding, I limped home. And while I'm amended, I let go.
Wow.
And there's a chorus, Even God Cries. And my sister and I we climbed into a barn because there was a neighbor, White Horse, next door. We just called Whitey. We don't know what his real name was. But we were going to feed Whitey, and we went up in the hayloft, and we found a bale of hay. And, at 5 years old and you know, 3.5 or whatever we were. We didn't know how to get the hay down, so we went to the ladder, you know, the opening for the ladder. We shoved that hay bale partway in there, and it got lodged in. Oh, no. And we got trapped in the hayloft.
Oh, no!
And there was no, I mean, and we got the double doors up, you know, the in old barns, you know, they used to load the hay bales through a conveyor from the ground up to, you know, second level. Right. And we managed to push those open and cry for help. And oh, that was pretty much it for that first part of that song with Jeff, you know.
Ooh, wow. So from that experience you drew, is that a song you can play for us?
Yeah, I bet.
Because I'd love to hear it now that you've set it up.
Even back in years, oh, I better see.
A little capo.
Yeah, I think I will.
I just capo it up.
All right. This is a little trick we...
Oh, drop E. What I
well,
call
it's capo without the low E. So when you play a D chord, you got that low E note. Because yeah. D is like the least satisfying bottom end note on the fretboard.
Right.
Because you haven't got that low string to go with it. But this way you do. Even back in 8 years old, Mom called me her little old, tough as nails and never show. It's what I felt inside. So I went way out on a limb, higher than I've ever been, till a big old gust of wind took me by surprise. And all scratched and bleeding, I limped home. While Mama mended, I let go, she said. Even God cries tears from his eyes. Boy, it's all right to cry a little too. And if you listen when it's raining, that's when God cries just for you.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Thank you.
Turn my mic back on.
Appreciate that.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
You're quite the prolific songwriter, and we like to focus in on the craft of songwriting. When did songwriting start to be a thing for you? You got your first guitar quite early, but when did you start writing the songs?
Well, I tackled being a songwriter. I cannot play you my worst song I ever wrote because it was the first one that had words to it.
Really?
And it took me till 12th grade to write a real turd like that, I got to say. And it was just one of those, oh, Lord. But it was, my friends loved it. Now, it was three verses. It had, you know, anyway, it was just, you know, a real POS. And wrote some songs in the 70s. And we opened for Jerry Jeff Walker in 76. And wow. We did one of my originals on the gig. And, you know, that was a thrill. And I knew that, even as a kid, I knew I wanted to be a songwriter because underneath all the titles on the Beatles records, it always said Lennon McCartney in parentheses.
Yeah.
And I knew what that spot meant, and I wanted to be in that spot. And I probably more than standing up there, you know, having a bunch of, you know, confetti thrown at me.
Mm-hmm.
And but it wasn't until 1981 in Phoenix that I encountered the Arizona Songwriters Association. And they hosted their songwriting symposium that year, which was, they brought in people from L.A. and Nashville. So from Nashville, they brought in Randy Goodrum, who wrote You Needed Me for Anne Murray, among other things.
Wow.
And Maggie Cavender, who was the head of NSAI back in the early days, and it was right over there on 18th Avenue for you Nashvillians. And then from L.A., it was Jay Graydon and David Foster and Bill Champlin.
Oh, my God.
Well, I mean, Graydon... Yeah, I mean, Foster, of course, everybody knows what a hit he is. I mean, he's just enormous. And back then, he and Graydon had written, We're in this love. No, wait, not that one. It was, they didn't write that. Sorry, that was Keith Stegall. It was, man, what was his song? It was an Earth, Wind, and Fire song. Oh. After the Love is Gone.
Oh, great song.
Yeah, and they were, and Graydon had played guitar on Steely Dan's Peg. That was his solo on that.
Whoa.
He produced Manhattan Transfer, and on and on. Foster worked with everybody, and Champlin was the lead singer in Sons of Champlin off the Bay Area there. But I found out later, in fact, Wood told me the story. I'd write with Wood Newton.
Wood Newton's a great
And he was
song,
telling me that over at House of Gold, you know, they cut the tracks on that when they went to do 20 years ago for Kenny Rogers. They couldn't beat the demo that they did on 16-track here in Nashville, so they used that for the record, and then they brought in Bill Champlin to dub Kenny Rogers' voice because Kenny couldn't hit the high part.
Are you kidding?
Yeah. And wow. Anyway, at that day, I never knew that. That's why I love stories.
Wow.
I drove up that day as a guy who wrote some songs.
Right.
And I left there that day as a songwriter.
Did you?
Yeah. That was the page flip that I needed.
What was the difference?
Difference was that I recognized that I had a long way to go. Mm-hmm. I had a lot of craft to learn, but I was going to dedicate myself to doing more than just dreaming in my apartment, missing a girl and going, ah, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Of course, we all start with that.
Right.
But, you know, Alan Shamblin came to Phoenix at another one of their events. He said, "What you going, Ryan? We'd love to, Dave."
That's so true.
Yeah. Alan is a guy that I would absolutely adore a chance to write with someday. Yeah. So, Alan, if anybody tells you about me, say, yeah, that Jeff guy, he's kind of corny, but he's all right.
Yeah, he's all right.
He's all right.
He's a great writer.
Glenn used to say, oh, you can't tell him from a good one.
Let's talk about Glenn Campbell.
Yeah.
15 years with him as his band leader. How'd you guys hook up?
By luck. And,
by luck.
You know, divine intervention.
Yeah.
The band, Jeff Dayton Band, was doing really well in Phoenix, and we were opening shows for a lot of people, and we had just put out our first little cassette.
Mm-hmm.
And KNIX, we were talking about earlier, the greatest station in the Southwest for many years, owned by Buck Owens, had made it a single, and it turned out to be a number one record at their station for 4 weeks. Wow. On an indie, which never happens.
That doesn't happen.
I mean, you were at... UBE in Cincinnati, and you know that you don't get into those Billboard reporters
unless you've got
the wheels, and we didn't. But at that same time, we opened a big concert for the Judds in Alabama and Merle Haggard.
Wow.
Glenn showed up to see Haggard, introduced himself to me. The next night, our band is booked at a golf course opening for Jack Nicklaus. At dinner is Glenn Campbell with Jack. And I walked over to him and invited him to sit in with the band because we were old friends by then, the next night.
Right.
And he called me 3 days later and said, "I want you to be my new band leader."
How about that?
Yeah, he said, "Hey, Jeff, you're a hard guy to find." I said, "Well, you could have got my number twice already, but it's all right. I forgive you."
Did you have to think about that one a little bit?
Just briefly.
Just briefly.
Yeah.
What was the first night like?
Terrifying. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're with the guy.
You're with the television show guy. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the TV guys, great grandma used to say. You know, and it was a lot of fun, though. I mean, we got to starting to rehearse in Scottsdale right away. This is 87, uh-huh. early 87.
So this is after the TV show.
What's that?
This is after his TV show.
Yeah, 87. Yeah. He had already had the Glenn Campbell Hour, and he'd had the Good Time Hour before that.
Yeah.
So he was in the MCA Records era.
Okay.
And Jimmy Bowen was producing his records back then.
Okay.
So it was timing with the release of Still Within the Sound of My Voice album on MCA.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Great record.
Great record.
So we're in an old studio in Scottsdale called Pantheon, which has been torn down for expensive houses, of course. You know, they can't.
That's happening here a lot in Nashville.
Oh, too. Isn't it? Yeah, everywhere. Yeah. Everywhere.
Yeah.
And anyway, it was fun to find out he was one of us. You know, he got on the guitar and people were pushing him at all. And there was and our band was doing all that Texas dance music like Bob Wills and all those good old songs. And he loved that we knew that stuff. And we had a hot bluegrass fiddler who doubled on banjo. And he thought, well, it's perfect for Gentle on My Mind. And, you know, so he hired the whole band as the Jeff Dayton Band and off we went.
Wow.
So it was partly familiar territory because we'd been playing in the clubs. I've been playing in the clubs since... 72, 73, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't like it was 15 years into doing this and opening shows for people. I knew what big stages felt like.
But yeah.
The fact that it was Glenn.
And Glenn, he was a great guitar player.
Mm.
I mean, absolutely a gem. Mm. One of the best.
Yeah.
And did you pick up some licks or?
Oh, had to.
Did you?
You had to. Well, I mean, here's an example. This is just the Gentle on My Mind.
You know,
that's keeping that note ringing like a banjo player. Here's another one. I was like, Glenn, how do you do that licky? He goes, oh, it's easy. You go down from the top and up from the bottom. But just do them together.
Together. I could never do that. That's awesome.
And Steve Warner was really in the club, too.
Another great guitar player.
Oh, yeah. And I met Steve in the summer of 1980 when he came to Phoenix, and we've been pals ever since.
Ever since,
don't see him as much as I'd like to, but he's a great guy.
Yeah.
And a wonderful songwriter and terrific Absolutely. Musician, and both are kids. Yeah. You know, both his kids are, nice are like that.
I remember introducing him at a show when I worked just outside of Cleveland. He was just starting out. Mm-hmm. He was doing magic tricks for us.
He could juggle and
do all that. Yeah.
Yeah, he was probably with Dottie Westbat at that point.
Probably was.
Or Bob Lumen, one of the two.
Yeah.
Because he played bass for Chet Atkins, and that's when I first met him. Was he was on his second single on RCA for Chet.
That reminds me of one of the greatest stories that I ever heard with Chet. And I don't know if this is true, but even if it isn't, I love this story. Can I tell it?
Yeah.
Squirrel. Steve Warner and Chet are driving through the country, and it's getting late, and they're lost. They don't know how to get their way back. There's a guy picking a guitar on a porch. And they drive up this driveway out in the country, and Chet says, "That's a nice guitar. You mind if I try to play it?" And he goes, "No, here you go." And he gives it to him, and he does the Chet thing, you know? and he hands the guitar back. "It's a good guitar." And he goes, "You know, you're a pretty good guitar player. You're no Chet Atkins, but you're pretty darn good." Can you imagine?
Yeah.
Amazing.
Oh, that's great.
And I know you got a lot of stories because I've heard them, man. And you said you do the podcast, you tell me some stories,
man.
Brother.
I've always had a thing for vintage guitars because I grew up when they were vintage.
Mm. Yeah.
And so I had bought a 67 Fender Telecaster Maple Cap, which vintage guys know what those are. And I think I paid $200 for it.
Oh, man.
It had a bad pickup in it. Of course, the guy didn't tell me that one of the pickups was no good. And I think I had just put the new pickup in it, and I took it out on the road, and I said, "Hey, Glenn, check out this cool old Telecaster I just bought." And he barely glances over, and he goes, "Well, that's nice, but I thought maybe you'd learn to play the first one." There's one,
Oh, that's good.
It was tough around him,
I'll bet it was.
Yeah.
Could he cut like a knife like that?
He could, but, he said, "Hey, if you see an opening, go for it."
Go for it. Yeah. Exactly. So he's a fun guy. Good guy to work
with. Oh, yeah. I mean, he had a one-liner for everything. whether it be... And a lot of them were things he learned from Roger Miller. And I grew up, as a songwriter, loving the wordcraft of Roger Miller, not knowing why I loved it, but I just did.
Yeah.
And you look back out on that stuff, sitting around drinking, me and the guys, 6 rounds bought, and I bought 5. I mean, when you flip a word back into it, that I still love doing that in a song.
Yeah.
I mean, I just love it. It's...
Just brilliant.
It's tremendous. And Jerry Reed, with his playing and, that sense of humor he had. And I think that's where my corny bone comes
corny
from.
Bone.
I don't know which one it is.
Did you get a chance to work with him?
With Jerry?
Jerry, yeah.
I wish. I met him one time, but that was it.
Another great
And
player.
That was when he wasn't really, I don't think he was feeling the fire much at that point. You know? It was in Branson in the early 90s, and most of the guys were... doing all the picking for him.
By then, he's the actor, Jerry.
Maybe. I wish I could have asked him. But and my friend Mike Bush, he's gone now, but Mike used to work with Jerry. He had also played with Johnny Lee quite a bit. He came up to Jerry one day and he said, "Hey, I got some great news." He goes, "What?" And he said, I just had 3 songs cut with Johnny Lee."
Yeah?
And, he said, what's the good news? He said, "Well, I got 3 singles with Johnny Lee." He said, "What's the bad news?" He says, "They're Johnny Lee singles." And Jerry says, "Well, you'll get a royalty bill for those."
A bill? Not a check, you'll get a bill.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. Unreal.
the world of writers and pickers and records is really a 3-way intersection. And you can't have good records without good writers.
I agree.
And you can't have good records without good pickers.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't have a hit record with just songwriters and pickers.
That's true.
So you need, what's that list? Fast, cheap, and high quality, pick 2?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. It to me is... it's a cool world to live in where I know all 3 worlds.
Yeah.
I've put out, we back in the 70s, we put out our first little, was it 70s? Yeah, we had a little 45.
Did you?
Yeah, a guy came up to us from the bar. He said, you know, I can lose this money in the stock market. Here's $1,000. Go make a record.
Wow.
So we put out
a That's a lot of money for a record back then.
1978, wow. Something like that.
Man.
And, you know, and back in the 80s when we were number one at KNIX with the Jeff Dayton Band's first single on KNIX, you know, we got people to help us promote it at radio and stuff like that. And wow. It was a lot of fun.
Wow, I bet it was. Now, occasionally, you guys get together and do a little Glen Campbell tribute, don't you? You were doing that before COVID. Have you done it since?
Probably been almost 8 or 9 or 10 years now.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, yeah, we're still doing it. We're going to be in, after this podcast, we're going to be in Menominee, Wisconsin, and Burnsville, Minnesota for
Menominee.
Two at the end of June.
I had to do that, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Menominee.
Yeah.
And then where, did she?
In Burnsville, Minnesota, Twin Cities area.
Okay, up to where you grew up, around there?
Yeah, it's actually real close to home.
So you Twins fan still?
Yeah.
Vikings too?
Yeah. You know, when I had my birthday a while back, you know, some friends of mine were at the gig that night. I was playing in my old stomping grounds. And they brought me a Twins cap and a beautiful, like, weather, you know, like a pullover, you know, half-zipper Twins jacket.
Nah.
Yeah, it was just like, and I just recently went to my first Nashville Sounds ball game.
Did you?
Yeah, our minor league AAA team here.
Yeah,
in
great
Nashville.
Team there.
Yeah, yeah, it was a
beautiful park.
Tail Wagon Tuesday. And you could bring your doggies. Yeah. Oh my gosh, I'll show you a picture. I have a picture of a German Shepherd eating a hot dog right in front of me. And it was I love baseball. I could
too.
Probably when I was driving back and forth to Branson to play with Glen Campbell.
Mm-hmm.
Living in Nashville, that I would turn on my AM radio at night and pick any ball game I could. Like we were talking about WIL out of St. Louis, and if some AM station that's playing some, you know, high school game, I don't care. I love listening to baseball on the radio because I grew up doing that.
I do too. You can do things while you're listening to radio. Watched it all on the radio. Yeah. Remember that song?
Yeah.
I watched it all on the radio.
I've got a song that hasn't been finished up and released yet called AM Radio.
Do you?
Yeah.
Oh, I got to hear that someday.
Yeah, it's for gray-haired people like us. We remember AM Radio.
I worked a lot of years in AM radio.
Did you?
Yeah. 7, 8, I want to say. Yeah.
You know, you still reach people, don't you?
Still do.
Yeah. I go down and do a little radio station in, where the heck's the name of the place? In Minnesota, in New Prague.
Okay.
New Prague. And it's a little AM station, and they have polka on the afternoons, and they have a little show on Fridays called Friday, you know, Live Music Friday or something like that.
That's cool.
Been down there a bunch with them, and they're sweet people, and there's always somebody that comes along and says, hey.
Hey.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. Yep. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, I want to talk more about songwriting and advice you have for songwriters, people that want to be songwriters. And we're talking with Jeff. Jeff Dayton is our guest. You're listening to The Songwriter Connection.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of U.S. Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product, fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You're listening to The Songwriter Connection, connecting with music makers and hearing their songs and stories. Now back to the show with your host, Dave Linehan.
The songs and stories of Jeff Dayton, who is with us today, around the dining room table, playing my Martin guitar. You told me things about my Martin that I didn't even know, Jeff.
I'm just a fan. I'm kind of a geek about vintage stuff. And
yeah.
I like to be able to, you know, to decipher the model name on it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love old stuff like that. I buy and sell guitars just for my own playing pleasure. I don't try to flip stuff for profit. I buy one and then I use it for a while and then I go, what else is there?
On to the next one.
Oh, God. So, the old joke about how many guitars do you need? One more.
One more. That's true.
Yeah, I was married and, you get a new guitar and she'd say, what's that? Oh, all that. This whole thing, I've had this for years. It's just been in the closet, you know.
I've always heard that guitar thinks it's a tree until about 20 years. So mine's just over 20 years now.
There,
so.
That's a sweet vintage right there. Yeah, sound. My old Taylor, my number one, is a 91. So that would make it, this year would make it 33 years old.
Wow, so that's no longer a tree. That's a guitar.
No, that thing's just printed with me from...
Absolutely.
Yeah, and a bunch of hash and stuff from Glenn Campbell, because he used to play it during the shows.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Don't ever get rid of that one.
Yeah. Can't do that.
Yeah. What I wanted to... I was on your... you have a great YouTube page.
Oh, thanks.
And tell folks where that is and where you can find it.
Sure. It's Jeff Dayton Music. Mm-hmm. On YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
Love it if you check it out.
Please do. And your webpage is amazing, too. All kinds of information there, too.
Thank you. JeffDaytonMusic.com.
Awesome. One of the videos I was watching today, you got a friend in Nashville. It was just filled with so much great advice for people that want to get into songwriting, that are interested in songwriting. And that's the topic I'd like to handle in this segment.
Sure.
What would you tell?
Well, these days, it's a whole different town.
It's a different
animal. I started coming here 40 years ago, and I just had a George Strait cut.
Yeah?
It happened on...
What was it? Can I ask?
Any Old Time.
Any Old Time,
On the Fort Worth album.
Awesome. Know?
Any old time, you get lonely.
Yeah, baby.
Now it's get cold. Oh, love is blue. Just snuggle up, honey. You're my one and only. Any old time, I'm here for you.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. You wrote that.
I did.
Wow.
Yeah. My friend at the time, Beth Nichol, contributed to that, too.
Wow.
Yeah.
To have a George Strait cut, I mean, I think that's the epitome.
That's still pretty darn cool in this town.
Yeah.
Songwriting today in Nashville, I mean, the fact that I got that song cut without having a publisher or a song plugger.
Yeah.
Is unheard of.
Well, let's talk about it. How did you get it cut then?
I made two cassette tapes. I had a terrible little four-track Tascam, the first model, mm-hmm. 144 cassette four-track.
Yep.
And I had a drum machine that went boom, chick, boom, chick, boom, chick. And I had a bass guitar that I had traded a friend of mine four Mars bars for his bass. We were getting together, and he said, I'll trade you my bass for those candy bars.
Wow.
And I had a classical guitar because I was studying at Arizona State.
Right.
And I had my steel guitar, which I bought my first Emmons in about 77, I think. Like I had
as
a lesson.
Buddy Emmons?
Yeah, as in Buddy Emmons. Yeah, wow. The Emmons Guitar Company.
Wow.
And I made a cassette, gave one to a fan, and I gave one to the opening act at the show because I knew about opening acts. I knew about sound check. I knew that the doors, security wasn't there in the afternoon mm-hmm. back then. And one way or another, one of those tapes made it to the bus, and about a month later, I got a letter from Irv Woolsey, who just lost this year. He was George's manager from the beginning.
Wow!
And he said, "We've got your song Any Old Time. We want to record it on George's next album."
And you went, "Nope, can't have it. I'm going to use that."
Man,
one.
I tell you what, I said yes so fast.
You did.
Yeah. And there was a different town back then. I mean, dozens and dozens of publishers on Music Row and the houses.
And you could go in pretty much and talk to them, right? And
you really
drop
could
off stuff.
Knock on the door and they say, what's up?
Yeah.
You know, and today, I mean, you have to buzz your way in and they don't want to let you in because there's just, it's so much smaller. There were labels everywhere, little indie labels. Yeah. But, you know, and I want to thank all the guys, you know, the old timers who were here when I came around with my new songs and skinny tie and a briefcase because mm-hmm. I thought that was cool in the early 80s. And
sure.
I got welcomed in. I mean, in fact, Glenn Campbell's publisher, Marty Gamblin, was one of the first to be super kind to me, and I guess he took a liking to me.
Mm.
And this is before Alan Jackson and all that happened. And he'd say, well, Jeff, I don't know. I'm pretty busy today, but I got about 5 minutes right before lunch. Why don't you come on by? And I'd get there, and about an hour and a half later, he'd say, well, Jeff, you want to go get lunch?
I love it.
Yeah, those kind of, those guys. And Charlie Bragg and you know, the Jim Denny and, you know, the guys that were here that would take Danny Davis, you know, from the Nashville Brass. He had Iffin music. No, he had Air Music, excuse me. Charlie Bragg was Iffin music.
Okay.
Anyway, those guys really, I mean, thank you for that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're all, just about all of them are gone.
Oh, boy.
Danny and I used to play a little golf together later on. But the whole thing is, you know, you could get those connections back then. Today.
What do we do today?
Well, here's the thing. Even if you are in town with good songs and you've spent your bundle on your demos or nothing, either way, where are you going to take them? You can't get anybody to make an appointment with you for the most part, unless you're, you know, Jimmy Webb. You know, you want to meet with them because they're just not listening. I mean, they've got their circle of people. And I've known guys for 35, 40 years that I can't get appointments with because that's not how it happens anymore. If you're not writing with the artist or if you're an artist, you've got to have your numbers at social. So I've heard people saying, you know, yeah, there's great new artists. What are your numbers? Meaning how many followers you got on TikTok, how many views you got on Instagram, you know, that kind of thing. My daughter's got 100K on Instagram and almost 500 on her YouTube and another 100 on her vlog on YouTube. And she can do it because she's got that kind of following. But, you know, she's got 500,000 people on YouTube and I've got 1,170. And she said, Dad, you'll never go viral. But I persist, you know. And the way that I found that works today for everybody who's listening, and I don't, maybe this isn't the best way for everyone, but is get to know people.
Yeah.
Get here, find out what we're doing, get the vibe, meet some people at the shows. I mean, even if you're brand new coming into shows, one of my co-writers, Dana Sherrick from Canada, from Toronto, was at the Commodore one night years ago, probably, gosh, I don't know, 6, 8 years ago. Mm-hmm. She said, I just love that Butterfly song that you do. And I said, thank you. She said, would you ever be willing to write with me when I'm back in town? I said, you know, that's such a sweet request, yeah. You know,
that's
as
nice.
Opposed to there was a girl at one publishing company and she had a t-shirt that said, hey, we should write sometime. Now, we call it germing here in Nashville because
we do.
You go up to somebody that does. Yeah. You have no business talking to them, but you're talking to them.
Yeah.
That's germing.
Yeah, that's germing.
And so Dana asked me to do that, and we wrote a song, and it danged if it didn't end up. Eventually, it was on one of my records earlier, but it was number one in Texas this last year.
Wow.
About a year ago.
That's great.
And like, okay.
And Texas is a whole other country, folks.
Yeah.
So they got their own charts. It's all.
Oh, they love their music down there. Red Dirt, you know. And but that's one way to do it. Get with somebody that you can see a career with.
Mm-hmm.
Just like Liz Rose did with this kid named Taylor Swift. And we know the story there. I mean, Liz has a whole building on 16th Avenue now.
Yeah, she does.
And you know, the people that were with Garth in the old days, you know, Pam Lewis and Bob Doyle. I mean, kaboom.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, wow. So I've got friends who play in the bands with these guys, but you can't go through the bands because it's kind of fairboating, you know.
Yeah, I got
like
you.
Like taboo.
Yeah. You don't want to do what you did back in the day and you know.
So what you do is you write with an emerging artist, and I write with a lot of them, and pretty much everybody that comes up to me.
Well, and you have the ability too, because you can produce them as well, right?
And that's not necessary though. I don't have to have both.
You don't have to have both.
You know, I'm just happy to write a good song.
And there's the bottom line there, right?
And there are people that have come up to me and said, "Hey, man, I want to write with you." And I said, "Really? How do you know me?" And they said, "Well, 15 years ago, you did something really nice, and you sent me a postcard and said, keep doing what you're doing," and I never forgot it.
Wow.
So it's also sowing seeds of kindness, which is a big part of what I try to be.
I agree.
Try to aspire to that all the time. And then do the hang and be a good hang.
Be a good hang. We've said that in the past.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, it's 90% the hang. There's this one road manager for an artist on the road, and he said, I don't care who's in the band. Everybody can play. Everybody in Nashville's great. They can all play. Just give me 6 guys who can ride from here to the L.A. and back and not kill each other, and I'll be fine.
Yeah, you can't be an a-hole. People remember that, especially in this is a big town, but it's a small town. It's a little big town, as they say.
That's where they got their name.
That's where they
got
their
name. That's Woody Bomar's publishing company, Little Big Town.
Yeah, that's the name of it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, all great stuff. And the other thing, too, it all comes down to, and it's co-writing. It's so important, especially in this town.
Mm-hmm.
because it increases your chances. And like you say, you like to write with a lot of good young talent that you see around. Mm-hmm. Not only do you mentor them, but I imagine you learn from mentoring too. So it's important to get in the room with people and share those ideas. Mm-hmm. It also increases the chances of that song's future life, because you've got three or four people with an interest in that song,
yeah,
of making it.
Yeah.
So it's a big advantage, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, just recently was a good example. I was writing with a couple of guys, Mark Hauser and Wood Newton. Mm-hmm. And Mark said something just casually, you know, he threw this line out there. I said, man, I like that. Mm. And, you know, I didn't come up with that on my own.
Ah,
you know,
yeah.
And it became one of my favorites.
Wow.
You know, I just cut it recently, and it's not for my current record, because the current one's already done, but yeah. What do you do when you finish a big record project?
What do you do?
Get back to work, writing more songs.
I'm working on a project right now, and it was going to be an EP with five, and I thought, well, we're going to make it six. And now, so we're going to do these six songs, and now I'm thinking, no, I don't think I'm going to do, because you write so much, and you go, I think this one is going to be better. I don't know, I'm so confused.
Yeah. When are you done? You're never done.
You're never done.
I did some things with Leslie Satcher out in Denver. We were on some benefit things together.
Another great writer.
And I said, I tell you what, that second verse of Troubadour for George Strait, you know, the truth about her mirrors, that a dang old mirror can't really tell the whole truth. I mean, there it is again, Roger Millerism, you know, flip that word back on itself.
Yeah.
And it can't see what's deep inside or read between the lines, and it's really no reflection of my youth. And I'm going, oh, slay me,
is
best second verse in country in the last 30 years.
Yeah.
And I told that to her, and I said, how did it feel when you guys hit on that? She goes, we knew enough to stay out of the way. And I said, well, wasn't that cool when you got word of that cut? She goes, yeah. And then we got another one right away. And like, wow. And then she says, then we got a third one. I said, what did we do? She has, go for four.
Of course.
Yeah, but they got three on one of George's biggest records ever. I mean, the Troubadour is one of my favorite George albums of the last 15 years.
Yeah. It had to be a thrill for you, too, because you said to your band back in the day, you do all those Texas swing songs.
Yeah.
And he's the king. And you get a...
And Cody Johnson, thank God for him and a couple other guys that are, you know, as I've been saying, putting their hair back on the legs of country music, because those guys really have it. You know, there's a Canadian artist named Gord Bamford, and he's legacy artist up there. And, you know, there are a bunch of other guys. Look at Chris Stapleton. Did you see his Saturday Night Live thing?
You know, that this last one, one before I did.
Yeah, man, I tell you what, that was something else. And
he's amazing.
You know, he's a tremendous artist. And Jason Isbell is another guy who's putting
He's one of my favorite writers today.
Putting the truth on the page, you know.
Mm-hmm. Really,
you know,
does.
I did that, and there was a, you know, song I did some time ago on the Sip It Slow album that I tried to get as real as I could, you know. Mm-hmm. There's a song on the Calypso Poet, which was my COVID album.
Calypso Poet.
Yeah, like that was one of my... I have 25 songs with one cover. Let's see. I don't end love like hers long enough. Let's see. I admit I felt like quitting on in a couple few times. And all the doubt I was dragging around did a number on my mind. My head was hard. It's lucky my heart was a door. I forgot about locking. I had wrecks and yets and old regrets. You were the only one watching. For the lessons I paid to learn and the bridges I almost burned. For the words I left unsaid. Every drop of the truth I bled. For the times I was on my knees and you listened when I asked please. For the days I prayed and you still called me one of your faithful. You're making me grateful. Let's see, and it's I'll check it out. Dang, I got so many songs I have to remember.
Yeah, you do, and that's the thing.
Yeah. The part-time sins of a wannabe saint left all my fenders missing some paint.
Oh,
the ozone opened and some hope appeared, and I could hear you laughing way down here.
Yeah, that's great stuff.
Yeah, I'm trying to dig
great
in,
rhymes.
You know.
Yeah.
But the Part-time sins of a wannabe saint left all my fenders missing some paint. I mean, I just love the honesty that Jason writes with, and that's kind of the bar I set.
Oh, yeah.
So, songwriters, again, I would say from Uncle Jeffro here, write your best stuff, put your heart on the page, and don't worry about whether people will like it. Because that keeps us cringed in, you know, like, oh, I don't dare say this because they might think, you know, and I had a conversation with a lady recently, and she was like, well, I know you were thinking this and that and that. And I said, no, not at all.
Mm-mm.
Sorry. I mean, you misinterpreted me completely. Yeah. So, you know, again, just say what you got to say and then.
Know what you want to say too, right?
Yeah. You got to be focused on the pinata when you're swinging, you know.
And that's one of the things when we were writing that that I took away from you. Every line that we came, I mean, does it point into that hook? Is it pointing to the idea?
Yeah.
Is it selling that idea?
That's definitely part of it. And I just talked to Wood and Mark about it the other day, you know, that we're writing together a lot, but we got to have that focus. I've told Wood this many times, you know, a locomotive will haul a lot more freight than a boxcar.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can line up pretty boxcars full of beautiful stuff, but how are you going to get it there?
Exactly.
And right. If you just got, and well, what are we going to call this song? Well, if you don't know, it's too late.
It's too late.
Yeah, I think.
Have you been those kind of rights where you're in search of the hook?
Oh, yeah.
You've got some great ideas around there, but what's the hook?
Yeah. But you know, the other thing is it's selective co-writing, because once you've written with somebody and you find out if they're a ponderer or a go-getter done.
Tell the difference.
Yeah, for me, it's like get her done, man. I mean, we can do lunch, but I don't want to sit and like, I wrote with a guy one time, and God bless him, we had a wonderful time. We got a great first line, and then we got stuck.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, what's the matter? He said, well, the second line has to be perfect. I said, well, yeah, but I'm ready. Well, can we at least draw a pencil sketch of the house before we get worried about what color the curtains are? You know?
Oh, good point. That's a good one.
That's another, thing.
Another gem.
But the other thing is, when you're writing with other people, and this is one of my sayings, you know, that the song is king. That's not my saying, but the one I have is, I don't care who sees the lane, drives a hoop, and scores. The only name on the scoreboard is team.
Mm.
So if I do heavy lifting and everybody else just gets to ride along, fine with me.
Right.
If, you know, somebody else gets that done, go for it, man. Make that bold step. I remember I was playing basketball in Reno one time, and not much of a basketball player, and there was this old black man sitting on the baseline, you know, watching us in this park. And he goes, drive, big man, drive. And I, because I wouldn't drive. I didn't know how to do that. Yeah, I would just stand there and shoot and then miss.
We on our 100th episode, we had Kevin Griffin, who he's the guy that leads the band Better Than Ezra. But he's also a great songwriter.
Oh, yeah.
Here in Nashville, he's had a lot of big
hits. Yeah, I've actually been in Hawaii with him. We've been on a songwriting conference together. Big, tall guy, curly hair.
Yes.
Yeah, great guy.
Great guy.
Tell him I said hey.
I will. And he's got a great book out right now that he voiced the audible version of the book. Anyway, he's on the show talking about the book, and one of the things he said that I still will always carry with me, when you're in a writing, he said, when you're in a writing session, you co-write, your ego is not your amigo, is what he said.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you hit a very good point there. I mean, if you're the kind of person that's got to drive every time, you know, maybe sometimes it's good to let other people drive and find out where you are, where your strengths are going to be. So,
and then knowing that, what can you get done with that particular lineup? And I'm a fantasy baseball manager in my mind of music, songs, and pickers and everything. Mm-hmm. So when I plan a band for a record, I did a record for Ariella Aspen when she was new from the Northwest. And she came to Nashville, and I put together a band of really nice people for her because I wanted good quality people. You know, Chris Luzinger from Garth Brooks, all his records, you know, he was on there, and I picked him for a reason because he's a sweetheart and a longtime friend.
A good hang.
And I did a thing for Kimberly Morton, a sweet angel we lost when she was only in her 20s.
Mm.
And I picked the sweetest people I knew in town because I wanted this 12-year-old girl to feel comfortable in the band instead of a bunch of hairy-legged, you know, swearing bunch of... I wanted her to feel safe. And her mom, you know, is still a friend. And you
That's
know,
great.
That kind of thing. So it's teamwork. And then when you've got people that... that, you know, they just stare at the floor for the whole time, You might want to put somebody else at shortstop, you know, because someone's going to come and it's like, what do you think? I remember writing, I won't name him, but it's one of my favorite lines about him. And three of us were writing and we were kind of stuck. And I said, hey, buddy, what do you think? You got any ideas? And he goes, I don't do ideas. I just fix other people's ideas.
Oh,
I love him, brother. I love him like a brother. He's a great guy. And that was one of the funniest things. But some people see themselves in that specialty role.
Right.
You know, and again, I am like when you guys, you know, the four of us wrote a couple months ago, whatever that was, a few months ago now. You know, if I see the lane, man, get an idea, I know where I follow me if you want to.
And oh, yeah.
But again, the groups, every voice in the group has a vote. And it, you know, again, it the word for a third, you know, and if we don't have a majority that are in favor of the change, then let's go back and make it something where everybody's in.
That's why I like at least three in the room. Right. You got a tiebreaker in there. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I like that. We had four, so we had...
We had four.
Yeah. We could have been deadlocked, but luckily nobody...
But we got through it. Yeah. You were driving that day, and you drove to the basket, and we got her done. So...
Well, I'd like to finish.
Yeah, I do,
you know, I like to do that more than... Well, we'll get back on the books sometime, and then that half-finished song sits in your notebook.
Did you ever have an idea, and I don't think we've ever talked about this on the podcast, did you ever have an idea and you brought it to the table and it just wasn't working with that specific team?
Yeah, yeah. I was writing with Bill White from WSM Radio.
I love him. I worked with him in Cincinnati.
Yeah.
Great
and
guy.
Bill's a great guy and still a pal.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
And I said, Bill, I got an idea for a song. He goes, what is it? And he goes, I said, abso-freaking-lutely. It's going to be a rocker, you know, and he goes, okay. That I'm thinking about you, what you said.
Nashville, no.
And he goes, well, I got an idea. It's about something that might change the world. I said, let's do that. So abso-freaking-lutely became part of, I put it on a record and I got it covered already. And but he came up with, when... trouble in the world and trouble in your backyard too.
That sounds like good.
Oh, well, don't trust it. Don't over you. This guy's a falling. Well, you ain't got a drop in the tank and you got no money in the bank. When you're in and then you're spinning and you don't know what to do. Well, have a biscuit. Spread on a little butter. Have a biscuit. Go on, have another, take a deep breath. Don't you take it so hard, the more you smile, the better things are. Take it easy and uncomplicate all the crazy of your everyday day. Set yourself down home, have a chair in the kitchen, and have a biscuit.
How about that rhyme, kitchen and biscuit? Yeah.
Hey.
Sometimes it doesn't have to be perfect.
Hey, I can't rhyme duck with foot, but that's close enough. You know, I think that...
How are we going to rhyme love today?
Oh, yeah. What you going to rhyme with love today? I still think, though, that the love song is the ultimate kind of thing, because that's what people will remember, you know?
Yeah.
Have a biscuit, that's for fun, you know? And people used to call those novelty songs.
Right.
You know, like, what a day for a daydream. But that was Love and Spoonful.
Yeah.
People love that.
Yeah.
Be your own novelty act if you have to. I mean,
I agree.
I have tried, though, really hard to move away from corny as a way of life, but I am still corny. Like, let me get... Now to my Jerry Reed days. Well, every time I walk in here, this place smells like a stale old beer, and I end up sitting by some bar stool genius. Well, I always mind my business, yeah. He gives me the business back, so I do my best to keep some space between us. Doesn't matter what's on TV, he goes on and on at me, and he don't know that I ain't even listening. 'Cause I'm walking circles in my head, thinking about my ice-cold bed and empty house. wishing I was fishing. Yeah, life is a mystery, where I'm preceded by my history. The answer is, I haven't got a clue. I know my meant to be is out there searching for me. All but my next ex is looking for me too. Yeah, my next ex is looking for me too. I'll play the last verse. Well, it's closing time. Genius left. I've been talking to myself so long, the barkeep done gone caught me off. So I hop into my minivan, make believe it's a black Trans Am, and I'm Burt Reynolds running from the law.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome, Jeff.
Thanks.
Fantastic.
And that's me writing solo. And
yeah.
I've learned how to put rhymes together. I've learned how to vary up the music. I've learned how to, you know, make something important in there for me. But man, I tell you what, I get more done writing by myself.
Yeah.
I mean, look at guys who do that. Like Dennis Lindy was one of the greats, you know. Mm-hmm. Costas, you know. Timber, I'm falling in love. You know, yeah. Guys living in a cabin in Montana, just knocking them out.
Wow.
So I'll be that guy for a while till, you know. I've had a lot of really good co-writers over the years, and you know, time takes us, you know, separate ways sometimes.
Right.
I've here in Nashville, especially. I mean, man, I've written some of the greats, and sometimes, you know, you come in there with high hopes, and you kind of leave going, well, that was just another co-writing session, wasn't it?
Mm.
And again, it depends on the title. The
magic doesn't always happen.
No, not. I mean, you can't invent magic. You can't send four guys out on a. Well, let's see. Okay, you can't put five guys on a basketball floor and make them an all-star team just because they're out there.
That's true.
You know, and but I have learned at the in the shadows of Glenn Campbell that sometimes the phrasing will totally change the way it goes. I wrote a song with John Colgan. Sorry, wrong John. J.K. Gully. Canada, John Gully. And we had this little sort of James Taylor. Something like that, you know? And I played it for Glenn. It's an open road we all travel. Sometimes it's freeway, sometimes dirt and gravel. What's at the other end? We don't know, my friend. Our lives are driven by the lure of the open road.
Wow.
Thanks. And Glenn goes, oh, don't say that. Like, what? Play it for me again. The ending. What's at the other end? We don't know, my friend. But our lives are driven by. He goes, oh, right there. Don't say that. I said, what? He goes, that. Sing that. Our lives are driven by. He goes, that. Don't say that. I said, it's an inside rhyme. Our lives are driven by. And he goes, I don't care. Give me your guitar. Our lives are driven by the lure of the open road. Kaboom. Knocked me back in the chair. And it was all he did. He didn't change the line. He just moved the word around the corner. Our lives are driven, complete thought, boom, done by the lure of the open road.
Wow.
The pickup word by belongs on the next line, by the lure of the open road.
Awesome.
Instead of that tricky songwriter device crap that we do so much, like, oh, this is really clever. It's like, well, how does it feel to the listener?
You got to have that.
You got to connect with your people. And that's why I love doing live shows, which I do. I think more than a lot of songwriters have over the years, but it also gives me a testing ground.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, you know, let's see who, I'll fly it up there, you know, I'll cook some dinner and see who like the, what they like.
Yeah,
you know?
See what they like.
Yeah. Like the guy in the Italian restaurant in Cleveland, we went up there and played the House of Blues with Sarah Darling.
Oh, cool.
After the show, they opened this place, I think it's called Brooklyn, just west of Cleveland or Manhattan, or I forget what it's called. And the Italian restaurant opened up for us for dinner afterwards. So it's, and we got a couple of Italians in the band, Jimmy Nicholson, Jimmy Giannetti.
That's a definite. And, absolutely.
The paisans. And, you know, we, and the guy comes out, he's right off the boat, and his chef is even newer off the boat. He goes, ah, don't worry about the menu. I bring you food. If you like it, I bring you more. If you don't, I bring you something else.
Oh, yeah.
So as a songwriter. So
like, just feed you. Yeah.
Yeah, well, just feed. I'll feed you songs. And if I can get a read. Man, I'll tell you what. I read something the other day that I want to offer as a tip maybe to people who have, if they have the ears to hear, let them hear, you know, that stars who have thrown major tantrums on stage because it's not going their way. You know, where they're like the famous tape of the Eagles, you know, where there's an open mic on stage and they go, I'm going to effing kill you. You know,
you count it down when it.
And Billy Joel losing it when the crowd is, you know, and one guy from one show that they didn't respond well enough, he goes, this is the last effing time we're ever, you know, and if you don't, you know, if you're not going to sing along, F you and all this, like, man. You can't. I can't do that. They can do that, but they're going to go in that article for the biggest, you know, what's in recent history. And I think that we really need to, both in songwriting but in performing, reward our listener for sticking around.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a key thing for me in songwriting too. Is like, okay, cute first line. We get people out. The first line. I'll go through it.
So important.
Mm-hmm. The first line is welcome to the dance. Take the listener by the hand and welcome them to the dance.
Right.
Give them a place that they go, oh, I like this room. Oh, this is nice. Oh, the band sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
And Jay Frank, the late great genius of song analysis, said there's a 7-second tune out and a 2-minute tune out.
Oh, wow.
So the 7 seconds, he wrote the book Future Hit DNA. I recommend it highly.
Wow.
We lost him some years ago. And actually knew him. I, you know, brought him to Hawaii for the KMF, and he just loved it. He's like, man, my wife and I can't believe it. Thank you, thank you. The 2-minute tune out. So we have to keep it interesting all the way through that second chorus. And then at the end of that second chorus, you and I both know we're all going, okay, what's going to happen? If they're just doing a solo in another chorus, I'm out. Because we have the attention span of a chicken.
Yeah.
You know, and
especially with the phones in front of you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. God. And so we have to reward our listener for sticking around by doing something really cool. And there's a song on the album called Sandy and Salty and Happy.
Where Sandy and Salty and Happy.
Yeah, and you might want to play that for your listeners at some point. Ooh. But right after that second chorus, play him that little bridge section.
Okay.
And it's like, it'll twist the head on a dog one county away. Man, it's just like, it's so different. And it's so refreshing. And even the guys on the session were like, dude, this is so cool. We don't play this kind of stuff. I said, yes, indeed. Welcome to Jeff's World. And then at the end of the song, and it was just an instrumental break, you know, but again, it's that 2-second tune out. And then, oh, they're still in. And then we come back from that, and it's not just like My Dog Has Fleas again. It's something else fresh. There's a production change. There's a layers of the record change. You know, you don't have to have everybody playing all the time. Mm-hmm. Space is a huge asset.
It is.
And little tweaks in melody. Haggard said, don't forget your melody's half your ammunition.
Yeah.
But when you get to the end as a lyricist, do something for them that they're going to go, oh, I'm glad I stayed. Because mama's dessert was better than the whole dinner, you know, whatever it is.
Absolutely.
Know? Or, you know. Whoa. So there, I think there's something about that. Is that fragmented enough for you?
Oh, absolutely. It's all great stuff.
Thanks.
That's not one you'd want to take us out and play live around the table, would you?
I can't play that section without the band. It's an instrumental tour de force.
I get you.
But it really is. I can play some of the song.
Sure.
Sure, yeah. This definitely a hats off to our.
Well, we encourage you to get the record. It's out there right now. And it is called?
It's called Welcome to Ocean Country.
Mm-hmm.
Ocean Country for sure. I'm equal parts cowboy and beach boy.
You know, I love it.
The tribute to our late great friend Jimmy. I'm such a genius, I confuse myself. I can do crazy like nobody else. I tell the mirror I don't need your help. Thank God I got a boat. Cast off the lines to trim my sails. Set my course on a pirate trail. Touch all the islands as the wind prevails. Down to the southernmost. And I moor my poor me troubles and trade them for a full of bubbles. Yeah, I love it here where the water's clear and my days all blow right past me. Sun on my face, who could complain? This life is great when you're sandy and salty and happy.
Oh yeah.
And then the bridge goes. Just the chords of it.
Oh, it takes you somewhere else. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Wow.
Brings it home again, but it goes through this whole nother portal.
Oh, it's another journey. It's,
and again, if that's fresh.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And unexpected. You know, yeah. But fits.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, if you can't do it with your dancing, be a good kisser.
I love it. We're gonna leave it there, Jeff. And I'll tell you what, this is a new record. It's out there right now. Check it out, Jeff Dayton. Welcome to Ocean Country. And Jeff, just some great words of wisdom today. And it's so Thank nice you. To talk to you. We could have probably done a few more hours.
I don't know.
So
why to,
we'll have to have you back.
I'd love to do it. We'll just pick a topic that I didn't cover today. But again, I like to offer hope and direction if I can and encouragement because, man, I am us. You know, I'm one of us, and we are all dreamers, man. We're dreamers with a pencil, some with a pen, but I decided that pen was invented by man. The pencil was God's gift. And so, just, you know, being ourselves till it's our turn. I mean, that's part of my twang on song.
You know. Absolutely. Twang on, brothers.
Twang on. Appreciate you, Dave.
Jeff, thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to the Songwriter Connection podcast. Find us on social media at Songwriter Connection. Also, listen to Dave Lanahan's Nashville Connections radio show. It streams live every Friday morning on WOBL and WNOI. Look for us on Facebook and YouTube. See you next time on Songwriter Connection.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of U.S. Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.